This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Yeah, buddy, it's hour five of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan here on your home of the Cowboys. Sunday's pregame at 4 o'clock with Chiafalo and Broadus. The kickoff at 7:15. It'll be a great NFL Sunday here with you on The Fan. We have play-by-play, we have talk shows, and we have the pregame show again starting at 4 o'clock. And for more on this matchup, Mike DeFabo writes for The Athletic there covering the Steelers in Pittsburgh. Joins us now here on The Fan. And a good evening, sir. How the heck are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, it's great to talk with you and get your insights about this team. What kind of weather are we looking at Sunday night? We're seeing possible thunderstorms.
Yeah, that was actually something I was going to bring up. My wife, coincidentally enough, works at the local NBC affiliate, and so she's a huge weather hound and news hound, and she was telling me, look, there very well could be a weather delay in this game, not just rain, but possible thunderstorms that delay things. So that definitely can impact things when you've got a passing team like Dallas coming into town, a team like the Steelers that wants to run the football, and then the uncertainty of the possible weather delay. So that's definitely something we'll have to keep our eyes on.
Yeah, now speaking of running the ball, are the Steelers prepared and capable of taking advantage of this Cowboys run defense? How determined are they to make sure this comes off right?
Yeah, the way I've been describing it here in Pittsburgh is the Steelers are committed to run the football, and they've run the ball. They have more attempts than any other team in the league right now. But just because they're running the ball a lot does not mean that they're running the ball effectively. If you look at some of their per carries numbers, they're actually near the bottom of the league in a lot of metrics. And especially when it comes to running the ball on first down, it's been like ramming their heads into a brick wall. And that was especially the case in Indianapolis. And, you know, this is a team with Arthur Smith, new offensive coordinator in his first year. You know, he definitely has a personality and an identity and a reputation for running the football that meshes well with the Steelers' ground and pound roots. And, you know, there's old school matchups with the Dallas Cowboys back in the day. You know, a lot of Steelers fans, yinzers here in Pittsburgh, were hopeful that this was going to be a team that was going to be able to lean on a great defense and effective running game. But to this point, the yards per carry is just not there. So, you know, I look at this as another real opportunity, especially with as banged up as the Dallas defense is and with some of their numbers statistically and their struggles defending the run. This could be an opportunity for the Steelers to get their ground game back on track. But until they do that, there's going to be a level of skepticism, and they're also dealing with a number of injuries on the offensive line that could impact things.
Yeah, what more can you share with us about the offensive line? Because I think that's been one of the things, from a Cowboys standpoint, how banged up they are, but maybe the Steelers are also pretty banged up on their line.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, over the last 2 years, the Steelers have made a concerted effort to bolster the offensive line. They brought in Andy Weidel as their assistant GM, and he was kind of Howie Roseman's right-hand man in Philadelphia, helping to build through the trenches and build that offensive line to be kind of the anchor of the team. So the Steelers took a very similar approach. Last year, their first-round pick was tackle Broderick Jones out of Georgia. This year, the Steelers spent first-round pick on a tackle in Troy Faletonu, second-round pick on a center in Zach Frazier, and a fourth-round pick in a guard in Mason McCormick. The disappointing thing for the Steelers has been both of those first-round picks have been disappointing in different ways. Broderick Jones, last year's first-round pick, he's now at right tackle, and he's really weathered ups and downs and inconsistencies. And then this year's first-round pick, Troy Faletonu, he's out for the year with a knee injury. So, you know, that's caused some moving pieces on the offensive line. The Steelers also lost James Daniels, one of their starting guards. So the good news from a Steelers perspective, I know I just threw out a bunch of names at you, Isaac Seumalo, who's probably their best offensive lineman, he plays left guard, he is going to come back after injuring his pec in the preseason. So this will be his season debut, and he's a significant difference maker for him, for the Steelers. You know, the Steelers have been missing his veteran leadership. They've also just been missing his physical dominance and, you know, the ability that he has to open up the run game. So, you know, they're going to, at left guard, get one stud back, but at right guard, they're going to be starting a rookie in Mason McCormick. So, you know, one guard in, one guard out for the Steelers, and we'll see how it goes.
Mike DeFabo here from The Athletic, talking Steelers with you in the G-Bag Nation. Health has been a big factor for the Cowboys. How big of a role is it here for the Steelers going into this one?
Yeah, I mean, it's significant. And I can just, you know, I talked about the injuries on the offensive line, and that's an ongoing thing. But on the defensive side of the ball, one key piece that they're missing is Alex Highsmith. You know, everybody knows about T.J. Watt and how he can wreck a game. You know, he's Batman, and his Robin is Alex Highsmith from the other side. And now with him going down, some Steelers fans were actually excited because they had a second-year guy in Nick Herbig who has been pretty promising when he's been given the opportunity. Unfortunately, he injured his ankle in the last game as well and has been limited throughout the week. So, you know, that's one big question for the Steelers is, like, teams love to double T.J. Watt. They love to chip him. And Shane Steichen, the head coach of the Colts, did a fantastic job of game planning to completely take T.J. Watt out of the equation. You know, he didn't have a single tackle in any form, let alone a sack or a negative play. So, you know, if I'm the Dallas Cowboys, I kind of follow that similar script. You know, what can you do to limit T.J. Watt, don't allow him to wreck the game, double him, chip him, you know, give him plenty of attention, and make some of these other edge rushers that the Steelers have that are less proven beat you.
One thing that really troubles the Cowboys are teams with a defense that can get home with four. They stop the run with the light box and play coverage. It's actually been kryptonite for Dak. How's that aligned with, you know, Pittsburgh's defensive scheme?
Yeah, that's kind of the way the Steelers like to do things. And, you know, that was a big point of focus when the Steelers played another veteran quarterback in Kirk Cousins week one. And that's really been their approach, is if they can, they want to try to generate pressure with four. So, you know, that's going to be a little bit different and a little bit challenging now with some of the injuries that they've had. And, you know, we'll see if they're able to do it. You know, last season, Cam Hayward, interior defensive lineman, very beloved here in Pittsburgh, he was injured throughout the season, and you know, even when he was on the field, he wasn't 100%. He's back and has been generating a pass rush, which helps that you're not just getting it off the edge, but you're getting an interior push as well, especially with a mobile quarterback like Dak. That's always an important factor here. So, you know, we'll have to see how it goes, but that definitely is very much the Steelers' identity. And then in terms of pass coverage, you know, I look at that as one critical matchup because the Dallas Cowboys near the top of the league in passing yardage, passing attempts, and the Steelers have made a number of changes in their secondary. You know, they did it in a personnel standpoint, bringing in a guy like Dante Jackson, who now plays opposite Joey Porter Jr. at outside corner, and then they brought in another safety in Deshaun Elliott. And what that's allowed them to do is play Minka Fitzpatrick, one of the stars of their defense, more in center field. And so, you know, to this point, the Steelers had cleaned up the explosive plays that plagued them last year. And it looked like they had taken a significant stride, and that was one reason they went from sixth best scoring defense last season to, until last week, they were number one in scoring defense. But that big play problem reared its ugly head for the Steelers against the Colts. They hit on a number of chunk plays. And so this will be a big test now and a bounce back opportunity for the Steelers secondary. And they had all those moving pieces. They had the changes. This should be better from a schematic standpoint and a personnel standpoint based on those changes. But we're going to have to wait and see if the Steelers are able to do it against the Cowboys.
Hey, Mike, I was looking at the Steeler film and, you know, getting ready for our pregame show here. And I was curious, they seemed to, there was a game where they had, where Porter and Jackson were playing opposite sides, like 50% of the game. And then maybe the next game it wasn't so much. Was there any rhyme or reason why that they flipped these corners? Because usually in college you play boundary corners or field corners. Is there anything that you can give us any idea of why they do, why the corners play opposite sides or, you know, flip sides?
Sure. So Joey Porter Jr. is their best corner. So it was interesting last year where it took until about midseason for him to start playing, but he quickly proved himself to be the top guy. And so, you know, what sometimes the Steelers will go left corner, right corner. And the way they look at it, with a right-handed quarterback, your left cornerback, the defensive left, that's going to be the guy that's targeted most often. So that's typically Joey Porter Jr. Now, the other thing I'll tell you is, historically, the Steelers are very much a man team. They like to play more man than most.
A lot of zone now, yeah.
Right, and that's changed a bit. Now it's mostly a cover three type team. Yeah. But when there have been instances when the Steelers have asked Joey Porter Jr., basically, look, this is your guy. You're going to try to take the opponent's top receiver out of the game. And I don't think that's going to be the game plan this week with CeeDee Lamb, but there are going to be a number of opportunities when the Steelers are in man coverage. That's going to be the matchup. They're going to put Joey Porter Jr., their best guy, on CeeDee Lamb. the best receiver from Dallas who's healthy right now. And that'll be a five-star type matchup every time those guys go head-to-head.
Mike, The Athletic had the anonymous player poll, and one player was quoted as saying of the Pittsburgh locker room that it smelled like urine. Can you confirm?
Well, see, I think he was talking about the visitors' locker room at Acrisure Stadium. So I haven't been in there quite as much. I cannot confirm that. And I was trying to figure out maybe that's a good thing. Like if the Steelers are scaring their opponents so much that they're peeing down their leg before they even get out there, maybe that's a positive. But I found that comment to be quite humorous as well.
Has this really just become Justin Fields' team?
It's a fascinating subject because, the way I looked at it, the Steelers kind of gave themselves two options. And I was a bit skeptical on both guys, wondering if either one could be the answer. And the way I look at it is, like, you have to examine the trajectory of both guys' careers right now. You know, Russell Wilson, even if he is maybe a little bit of a better passer, right now he has an injured calf, and twice over the last five seasons he led the league in sacks. So you put an immobile Russell Wilson back there who's still recovering from an injury, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. And on the flip side, you know, Justin Fields is only 25 years old. Obviously, things did not go the way that anyone had hoped in Chicago, but Arthur Smith has really called a conservative-type game plan. I think he's giving Justin some easy reads. He's highlighting his mobility in a number of ways. He's throwing easier, completable passes to the sidelines. And as a result, Justin has the best numbers in virtually every stat, completion percentage, passer rating, interceptions are down. So the way I look at it is, like, the Steelers – needed a long-term answer at quarterback, and these two guys were kind of like a Band-Aid solution. If you could find out that one of these guys is the answer in the long term, I would keep rolling with them. And I'm not convinced either one is that, but if there's going to be one of these two guys, I think it's probably going to be a 25-year-old Justin Fields rather than a 35-year-old Russell Wilson.
Mike, I know you live with this team, but just watching your tape, is Patrick Queen struggling a little bit with some of his play?
Yeah, I mean, he was an interesting guy because coming in here this offseason, the Steelers aren't a team that's known for spending big in free agency, and he actually broke records in terms of an outside free agent that the Steelers brought in. And so with the tradition of linebacker play in Pittsburgh, there was a very high bar for him, and I don't think he's cleared that to this point. And, I think he's been okay in coverage and not quite as impactful when it comes to the run game. And, I just wonder if maybe more time within the defense he'll get more comfortable, or if maybe the Steelers getting their hands on him a little bit more, understanding his skill set, they can help him play to his strengths. You know, one thing he hasn't done a lot of right now is blitz. You know, as we were talking about earlier in this conversation, the Steelers try to generate pressure with four. You know, he's known as a very, very good blitzer. That's part of his DNA. I wonder if maybe that could be a way to kind of get him going. But you're saying actually exactly the same things that radio hosts in Pittsburgh are saying. You know, they spent all this money on a guy. We'd like a little bit more splash.
Okay, it's Mike DeFabo here of The Athletic talking Steelers out of Pittsburgh here. Does Pittsburgh, the city, hold Mike McCarthy as one of their, like, football sons they're proud of?
They do. They do, definitely. I think Pittsburgh – Pittsburgh is not that dissimilar, I think, than Texas, where, I remember growing up, it was like I played a football game in junior high on a Thursday. I went to my brother's football game on a Friday. I went to a college football game on a Saturday, pro game on a Sunday. So it's all football here, and anyone who's raised in that atmosphere, who goes on and does good things, Pittsburgh will always call them one of their sons. So it'll definitely be a nice reunion for him to come back to Pittsburgh, and people are very proud of what he's been able to accomplish.
So as a Cowboy fan going into enemy territory there in Pittsburgh, how venomous is this hatred towards the Cowboys from Steeler fans with the history there?
You know, I think it depends. Like if you ran into an old Yinzer in the parking lot, he might have some choice words for you, but people of a younger generation, I think that rivalry has kind of died down. You know, these two teams don't see each other quite as much. I think it's almost like a respect thing. Like, hey, we're a franchise that, prides ourselves on Steeler Nation, and we feel like we have fans all around the world. And you go to any opposing stadium, and you see the terrible towels. And I think Dallas is very much the same way. You know, they call them America's team for a reason. You'll find Dallas Cowboy fans probably in Pittsburgh just because of the strength of that brand and what that team means to the whole, United States. So I like this matchup in the sense that it's two premier historical franchises, tons of fans. So there'll be tons of people watching, and hopefully it'll be a great game.
And is this word you've used, is this Yenzer? Does that mean old guy?
Yenzer. So, let me educate you guys. This is perfect. So y'all say y'all,
yep.
Like the plural you. So in Pittsburgh, it's like the plural you. So Yenz, Y-I-N-Z. And then it's kind of like a joke because basically – everybody has like an old uncle who says yin seriously, but then everyone here who's younger says it kind of ironically as a joke, kind of tongue in cheek. So
like you're
a
boomer.
Right. Yeah. Well,
kind of
a bit. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of along those lines.
Would you want Mike McCarthy as the Steelers coach? Speaking of a yinzer?
Maybe at some point. I would have liked him as an offensive coordinator here. But I think the Steelers love their reunions. It seems like this is a place that you can always go home. Like Ryan Shazier is now back as an assistant coach. Ike Taylor is around the organization. Ryan Clark stops in. So it seems like if you're from Pittsburgh and you've ever been in the city, you have a place with the Steelers. So, if things ever went poorly for him or he decided that, he wanted a change of scenery, I'm sure that the Steelers would welcome him with open arms.
Thank you so much, Mike. Enjoy the game, and we'll look forward to catching up with you another time.
Sounds great. Thank you guys so much for having me on the show.
You got it. Yeah, maybe another 4 years or so.
Yeah.
Maybe a Cowboys-Steelers Super Bowl. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. That would be.
Maybe not this year, but in the not-too-distant future. Thanks to Mike DeFabo of The Athletic for stopping by and talking Steelers football with us. It's good to know Mike's respected,
Yeah.
Hasn't spent a lot of time in Pittsburgh as a professional, but definitely a guy that is known as a Pittsburgh dude and in football country indeed. Sean Lee's out of that part of Pennsylvania, right? Sean Lee?
He is.
Massively different than Philadelphia.
Yeah. That's Micah's Philadelphia area, right?
Yeah.
Where Micah's
Hershey,
from. Yeah.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah. We know that from all the Sixers jerseys he wears at Mavs games.
Do you guys, if they called and said, let's do a coaching swap, Tomlin comes to Dallas and Mike goes to.
He was talking about, he must not have watched Dallas play much offense.
He's a good caller. He's probably speaking his language.
I kind of used to bad offense.
I threw up in my mouth a little bit.
It'd be an improvement, probably. College football super segment coming up, Will Chuck.
Yeah, shots fired at the 12th man. The top five jobs in college football and bacon vending machines. That's next.
Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. It's time for a college football super segment, 214, talking about Mike DeFabo, our guest, says, these Pittsburgh media guys have been hyping up Mike's offense all day. That is crazy. And, it is, but I guess passing yards, the Cowboys are like third. Points scored, they're like 11th. I think a couple of busted plays have happened that have allowed them to make huge plays. Obviously, the fourth quarter against Baltimore had a big say in what the stats look like. But I think statistically, if you look up the Cowboys offense right now, it's way better than what the Steelers have going on. And, maybe they admire it because of that. But I also think that Mike McCarthy's a legend there. And whatever offense Mike McCarthy has, I don't think the people of Pittsburgh would consider it his fault. They wouldn't even go down that path. Segment of the Nation is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one's hurt in an accident due to somebody's negligence, call the Frankels for a free consultation. 214 or 817-333-3333. Go to frankelfirm.com. You have Texas State and Troy on TV right now. We're about to get into a college football super segment. Join us tomorrow. We will be live at Southern Leisure Spas and Patio on Justin Road in Flower Mound. Get your 2024 Whataburger-themed flag while supplies last. We'll have three bet payoffs for you as well. Here's the Woolly Bully.
All right, so 10:30 here on 105.3 The Fan, we begin coverage of Mizzou and Texas A&M. Now, earlier we had the Eli Drinkwitz story about, we've got a little conflict of interest. Sister of Texas A&M starting quarterback is on the staff there as a recruiting director at Mizzou. So we also now have their quarterback of the Missouri Tigers, who, not really a big fan, or I should say maybe just not concerned about the 12th man and that Texas A&M fan base
loud
at
place
Kyle
to
Field.
Play, yeah.
So Brady Cook is their quarterback, and here is what he had to say about the 12th man.
The noise at practice is actually louder. They put these big speakers, pretty much 2 feet right behind me. And I mean, you can't hear anything. It's loud. In stadiums, it's loud, but it's like a surrounding, kind of more distant loud. So it's a little different. I think it's, just as loud or louder or tougher to communicate. That's great work. We've been doing that every single rep this week.
I think he might end up regretting that. Noise level at Kyle Field's been recorded at a volume above 125 decibels.
Dang.
Which makes it one of the loudest stadiums in the country for any sport. And, certainly if you remember their matchups against, Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
That place can get rocking. We can make jokes about Texas A&M and the Colt and all that stuff, which... True, but they are a crazy fan base, and they love their Aggies, and that is certainly one of the most hostile environments in the country to play. I'll be interested.
Can't replicate that.
No, I don't think so. No. It'll be we'll see how Brady Cook fares.
You can make it as noisy, but you can't recreate the energy.
No,
what that feels like.
It's crazy.
100,000 plus yelling at you.
Now they can even fit more than when you were there as a part of A&M.
Yeah, I wonder what the largest crowd he's ever played in front of.
That'd be a good question.
You know. And the Aggie fans, I'm not saying this because I grew up there, but that going in there with LSU and seeing other teams play there and stuff, I've seen veteran quarterbacks just crumple in that environment just because, you can't communicate. Nobody, all of a sudden, they kind of dial up some blitzes. Now you're getting hit, balls in the air, balls on the ground. Going the other way, and the thing about Kyle Field, of all the stadiums ever been, the noise never stops. when it's they're huddling, you still hear it's, there's a lot of places you go to, even a Minnesota or Kansas City in the pros, the fans, when it's a huddle, they kind of stop. And then they pick it back up when you break the huddle. At Kyle Field, it just, watch when you listen to the game. It never, that noise never stops. And it only gets louder the more problems you have. If they realize they've got you on the ropes as far as your communication,
yeah,
it gets worse. So
I believe it.
Good luck, young man.
It looks like a crazy place.
You're going to need it. You're going to need it tomorrow.
We have an interesting
Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday. Interesting deal with this bacon vending machine. Ohio State has unveiled a new bacon vending machine at their football stadium. So, hey, this is a weird deal. We saw the pizza vending machine in Vegas.
It was awful, wasn't it?
It was awful. Yeah, it was awful. But this is the first of its kind at the Shoe. You can go up to the vending machine and get bacon out of it. I don't,
I am a bacon guy. I make some bacon most mornings for Abby and Remy's omelets, and I love a good bacon. I just haven't found a way to quickly make it. There's no hack around a quality made piece of bacon. It's got to be in an oven at 350 degrees for somewhere between 15 and 18 minutes. After 15 minutes, you got to check it every couple of minutes. If you're doing anything else, what is the mechanism for heating up this bacon? Don't tell me it's a microwave.
I have a lot of questions about this.
Do your daughters, do they keep it in the full strip, or do you like it crumpled?
Oh, full strip, yeah.
Okay.
To perfection.
There's no way that you can get them to try it where you can you do it in the oven, and then you crumple it, you have it in a Tupperware, but you crumple it and you put it as part of the omelet.
Sure. Yeah, I could do that.
Where all of a sudden, do they like the rubbery texture of the whole bacon?
The chewiness?
What do they like about it? I'm just asking.
I make it perfect. It's a perfect combination of chewy and crispy.
Okay.
It's right there. And that's what doing it in a cookie sheet in the oven allows
you to
do.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think to me, if I knew that I had to, they like bacon.
Yeah.
But I worry about, I would. Like you say, cook it in the oven and get it. I mean, even do it smoked.
And just have crumpled bacon in the fridge waiting to go in the omelet.
Yeah, and then when you do the omelet, do they use it with cheese?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Little bacon, boom, boom, little boom. Bacon bits and the cheese.
Ready to rock.
Little bites with the cheese, little bacon mixed together like that.
I like it, but we also do strips of bacon. It's not just the bacon in the omelet. So you could, I don't think you could cheat your way through that.
More bacon on the side.
Yeah, I just thought maybe they like the, I didn't know they like the bacon. They're eating cheese omelets with bacon on the side.
No, it's a bacon cheddar omelet with bacon on the side.
Extra bacon. Wow. Add some extra bacon there.
And a piece of sausage.
You got a lot of love for the air fryer coming in as a way to cook bacon. And I think you can really do anything.
I'll tell you what, bacon. Yeah, to me.
Okay, so the issue with that is the grease drains. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, right. Yeah.
And now your air fryer is a mess. You got a major cleanup. Okay, there's
like
nothing better
a juice maker.
Than a piece of aluminum foil down on a cookie sheet. It contains it all.
Oh no, you're right.
Let it cool down, and you just crumple it up and throw it away.
Do you have a do you have a wire rack? You put in your cookie sheet?
No.
So I need to get you a wire rack.
Okay.
Because what you can do is you can sit a wire rack on top of your cookie sheet.
Yeah.
And it could, you get the, mm-hmm. it doesn't sit on the foil.
Yeah, it's not cooking inside the grease
air,
as much.
The air gets all around the bacon. I'll bring you, I'll go to the restaurant supply and get you a wire rack.
Yeah, next year we get Texas at Ohio State, 940, text in. I was like, I'm going to have to try this bacon vending machine. So if you do, let us know. I mean, maybe the bacon vending machine can be better than the pizza vending machine, but the pizza one was a fail for me.
Is it kept warm? I don't know. I'm asking a lot of questions.
I have, like,
yeah.
I mean, does it cook a little bit while it's coming down? Does it go through a little oven?
It's got to cook it in it, I suppose. Or maybe it's just reheating. Maybe it's already pre-cooked and they're just reheating.
I was kind of thinking maybe in the slots are already heated, so the bacon's being kept warm.
I don't really get how.
Oh, we're already cooked.
Yeah.
We're just kind of chilling, and
yeah,
I can see that.
Yeah, it's already keeping it warm. I don't think I would eat it.
Yeah.
After your experience with the pizza in the vending machine, the way you described that
was gross.
It's more of a novelty and a fun thing than you're actually getting a good value for food.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, what like with the pizza. It wasn't like, damn, I think this is going
to
be an excellent
You guys
piece
had a lot
pizza.
To drink that night, though, too.
We
right?
did, but it was also just like, oh, this is fun. Let's try it.
And you regretted it because it was $18. You weren't getting back.
Yes, it was expensive and it was not good. So the regrets were real. Yeah. The Athletic has the top five jobs in the country.
College football?
Yep. Which program is the best? Number
Texas.
One. You think Texas?
Texas is number one.
Texas is number two.
Georgia.
Georgia is number one.
Okay.
So they got Georgia at one. You want to guess all the top five?
Top five?
So you got one and two. Let's go.
Okay, so we're going Georgia, Texas.
Yep.
I'm going to say Ohio State.
Number three.
Number four, I'm going to say, I'm going to say Oklahoma.
Not Oklahoma. Oklahoma's not in the top five.
Clemson.
Not Clemson, no. Not in the top five.
Okay. Penn State.
No. Not Penn State.
Okay. Notre Dame.
Notre Dame, I thought, would be up there. They're at 12.
Okay. We're still trying to think four, right?
Yep. You got four and five. You need four and five.
What are the criteria?
USC?
This was voted on a poll from the Athletic.
Got to be Florida.
Florida, no.
USC.
It is not USC.
Alabama.
Oregon.
Alabama. Alabama's
number four. I thought I said Alabama.
No, Alabama.
Oh, I didn't. Alabama's number four. Oregon, number five?
Oregon's number six.
Number five.
Michigan?
Michigan.
Michigan is seven. By the way, Florida was nine, and USC was eight.
LSU?
LSU is five.
Well, overlooked them, Brian.
You not think so?
Man, I don't know.
Yeah, they went Georgia one, Texas two, Ohio State three, Bama four, LSU. Top five jobs in college football, followed by Oregon, Michigan, SC, Florida and Miami.
Well, that Miami job's 10. Raised up. That used to be a train wreck job.
Yeah. Oklahoma, they had down at 19.
Man, I thought that Oklahoma would be a really good job.
Maybe it's because they moved into the SEC and people aren't sure if they're going to be able to maintain
LSU,
you know, as consistent
five.
Dominance. But
and we got Brian Kelly.
No. Yeah, and I don't know if Brian Kelly's going to be last in there.
I don't
You've got
either.
A great commitment to winning. You don't have high academic standards. You can get a lot of players in there.
That's
your talent pool
that.
Is always good.
Yeah. You know, we're kind of a broke university, but we do good with the NIL money. We've kind of figured that out.
Got
because
your priorities right.
We've got, you know, Raising Cane's is our guy. They help us on this stuff. But, yeah, we can get kids in. Yeah, I just don't know about Brian Kelly, though.
I don't either. I really thought he was going to be better.
I'm kind of, and it's not that I have to have a Coach O, but I thought we could do a little bit better there.
You don't want him as part of your family
my
anymore?
My family.
He stresses me out during games. Way
Sorry
stresses
about that.
me. Me and Hellman get stressed out with each other in the games and this going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Texas, it says, quote, it's the absolutely unlimited resources that you have to do whatever you need.
Yeah.
That's one OC in the Power Five. That is a place that has zero excuses.
But until Sark, I mean, a guy couldn't balance it. He couldn't figure out what it would take to actually win. You got all these resources, but you also have boosters, and you got to be involved, and we're keeping the brand going.
Mac Brown?
Yeah, Mac had him
going. Well, yeah, after
Mac.
Mac
and Sark.
Oh, after Mac. I mean, after Mac. Like, after Mac. Oh, yeah, you're talking about the
decade.
Charlie Strong.
Tom Herman.
Yeah, okay, there you go. I'm sorry. I was thinking Mac was there for, like, what, 12 years and won, like, 10 games a year for and they ran him off, right?
Yes. Yeah, he had a streak going.
Well,
I would beat Oklahoma for a while.
I mean, nobody has actually realized that potential.
Yeah, I think that Texas is still trying to get there right now, right? Yeah. I mean, they're on their way. This guy's got it.
He's got it figured out.
They seem like last year was finally maybe. Yeah. Hey, we're over the hump now. We made the playoff. Now we're going to be consistently good.
Let me tell you what. Don't be the third or fourth team in the country and get beat in the first round. In the playoffs.
Now all of a sudden you can't win a playoff game.
Yeah. Yeah.
You lose to a Pac-12 team two bowl seasons in a row.
Yeah, that'd be
rough. I do think that leaves something to be said.
I think we actually have a Michigan-Washington rematch this weekend. The national championship game. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, in Seattle.
Well, thank you, Woolchuck. It is, a college football super segment for you here. The KMC Masterpiece live tomorrow, Buffalo Wild Wings in Louisville. It's a Football Friday with KMC, and then we'll be at Southern Leisure Spas and Patio from 2 to 7 there on Justin Road in Flower Mound. Get your 2024 Whataburger-themed flag. That is tomorrow. We have 3-bet payoffs and 5 hours of sports content. We're coming back to mix with the Fan After Dark, see what Fred and company and CA. Fred and CA have cooking here for you on a Thursday night. Thank you, Lucius. It is the GBAC Nation here on 105 Through the Fan. It is time now to hand off the broadcast baton to the Fan After Dark. Gentlemen, good evening. How the heck are you?
Good, man. How you guys doing today? Solid show. You got a remote tomorrow. I mean, is there a better way to close out a Friday or a week than so on good. Remote?
Getting out there to Southern Leisure Spas and Patio. You got it made.
So, wait a minute. And so you're shaving your eyebrows tomorrow?
Yeah, I think so.
So what? I mean, how did you get suckered into it? I know you guys did the bet payoff. By the way, you can't even tell with yours anymore.
I can't pick a game. You know?
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I'm 0-4.
We're failing. I'm 1-3. Yeah. You know, okay. So I actually got 2 bet payoffs due tomorrow.
Okay. Well, I'm playing catch up. I applaud you guys because it's not like you eased into this thing. I mean, you started with these bet payoffs at the very top. I mean, where do you go from here?
I don't know.
We're running out of ideas.
To be honest with you. Yeah. Hopefully not peeing my pants like Eric Chiafalo did last Friday.
Yeah. Oh, solid, though.
Yeah. I mean, Chiefs going into a cold tub tomorrow. I think Brian's going to as well, the Jim Harbaugh.
Jim Harbaugh. It's coaching shirt.
Okay.
Khakis. Yeah, the whole clothes. Yeah,
you know, going the whole deal.
Into it. Yeah,
I can dig it. I can dig it. Well, if you ever need, I mean, look, I'm looking for an excuse to shave my head because I'm debating on it. Yeah. Like just in real
life. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Why?
I'm telling you, 1983, Dawson knows the story. We were playing Mississippi State in a game. We all thought, oh, let's get flat tops.
Yeah.
Let's all get old school 1950 flats.
Yeah.
Little Rock Arkansas special.
I had hair and it never came back.
Get out of here.
It
Are
never
you serious?
Came back. So don't.
Like, he said this story 2 years ago, though, and I got the Brian Broaddus haircut. I totally bicked it down, created the cul-de-sac, the whole thing. I believe you have the follicles of the gods as well, Fred. I think you're going to be all right.
Okay.
I'll shave my head. Yeah. That sounds fun.
Fred, I wouldn't do it.
You know, your boy Henry says fire them before they quit.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where I'm at right now. Because I'll tell you, you know what's killed me?
Is it thinning?
Well, it absolutely, you know what it is? And you guys can appreciate it. When you see yourself on the fan cam, you see yourself in a different light.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's not
it
always.
It adds 10 pounds.
I was just about to say, camera.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
You're seeing yourself in a way that I had never, I mean, come on. The mirror versus the fan cam, it's a little bit different. So it's like,
I started noticing gray in my hair, and that was in the beard, too. And that was,
I'll take that all day.
That was a wake up call for me, though.
I'll take that all day.
What are you going to do? Are you going to dye your beard?
No. When you see something for the first time, I mean, I'm 32. I didn't expect to have gray.
Get in touch with your mortality awful quick there. It's an interesting journey.
You're thinking
journey.
About shaving your, not shaving, but you're thinking about dyeing your beard, aren't you?
No, I would never do that. I
thought
that was
I thought you guys scuffed it that as a bet payoff.
As
exactly.
A bet payoff. Yes.
Okay.
But I don't know.
He literally, like, last year during the holidays, he cut his hair exactly like mine.
Yeah.
Like with the bald. Is it 2 years?
Yeah.
I thought it was last year. Wasn't it last year?
I don't know.
Anyway, we're out there. Yeah, we're out there at the rally house.
Yep.
Out in Arlington.
Okay.
And like crowded, and Walt the barber
did
comes in, does the whole thing.
And his
daughter's crying.
He dyed the sides of my hair white and everything. I thought it was hilarious. It was the most fun I'd ever had doing a bet payoff. And the hair came back fine.
I was going to say, you look fine.
It was cold. I'll tell you what, you want to do it before it gets too cold.
Yeah.
All right.
Because the lack of insulation will put you on your heels for sure. Congrats to the Tigers, by the way, for beating the Astros.
Yeah.
I think Detroit is our adopted baseball team now.
We appreciate that. Come one, come all. There's plenty of room. You know, I mean, we got plenty of former Rangers on there. We did a little Ranger-Tiger crossover. There's some random ones throughout the Kenny Rogers, Juan Gonzalez. I think, who else did we name on there? Some recent ones.
Was Pudge a catcher?
Pudge Rodriguez.
I was throwing Pudge and I was scared.
Yeah.
I was scared. Like, I was going, Pudge. And you were like, he wasn't on the Tigers.
You waited for me to jump in there?
go for it, Dawson.
Dawson, I did wait for you to say it. I knew you were going to say it.
No, that 2006 team, he was very impactful for the Tigers then.
Yeah. How much do the Lions want to destroy the Cowboys next week? I feel like this is a revenge game for them, and the Cowboys have no chance of winning.
Yeah, I this is what I told the morning show guys. I've never in 32 years of my life been confident about a Detroit Lions team.
Yeah.
But coming off a bye, the way that offense looked on Monday night, the revenge factor from everything that transpired at AT&T last season, I'm pretty confident. Now that'll probably blow up my face, but.
What was the change? When did it happen? Was it that Green Bay game where they went into Lambeau Field and they had really nothing to play for?
You could point to that. There are little instances because Dan Campbell's first year they were 3-13. You know, it sounds cheesy. We always talk about culture and a winning culture, but it just felt so different. You'd go down to the practice facility in Allen Park and it just used to feel like a losing organization. You feel that when you walk into a building.
Yeah, I've been a loser. You're right.
No,
go ahead.
That's not what
that hurts. That hurt a little backhanded slam.
I know what he's talking about.
No, I'm just saying you can recognize organizational culture.
Yeah.
And it really, obviously, you point to that 8-8 year where they had nothing to play for, that big win in Green Bay. But also just from a management perspective with Brad Holmes and you never used to trust the process.
My guy John Dorsey's there too, helping him out.
Love John Dorsey.
John Dorsey
does not get near enough credit.
John Dorsey and I worked together in Green Bay, man. I mean, I love John. And he's the one that drafted
Pat Mahomes.
He drafted Pat Mahomes.
And Kareem Hunt. Yeah. So
but he also drafted Baker
Hill.
He also drafted Johnny Manziel. Okay. He wears that one too.
No, that wasn't a good look. Real quick, did you ever see his little manifesto?
Who, John Dorsey's?
Yeah.
I lived that manifesto.
I asked him if I could see it because I saw him at in a press box back in Houston, and I asked him if I could ever see it, and he's like, "Nope, that's not for public consumption."
It's pretty interesting. John's a highly intelligent guy.
He's a different cat.
He's a very different cat, though. He takes scouting very seriously. Yeah. I remember the first time I ever was working with him. This is before cell phones and all that in '92, and I never could find out where he was. And it was and like he'd call me up and I'd go, John, where are you? He goes, I'm in Seattle. And the next day he'd call me up and I'd go, John, where are you? He goes, I'm in Boston. That's how he traveled.
Yeah.
He'd hear a name and he'd be in Seattle and then he'd be in Boston the next day. Then he'd be in Miami. Then he'd be in Phoenix. Then he would be. That's how he.
And don't him and his wife live in different states?
He's gone through a lot. Yeah. John's gone through a lot. Yeah.
You can't be married and married to the game at the same time.
You can't be married.
That's
tough. Yeah. The NFL is a strange lady.
What do we have coming up on the show tonight, gentlemen?
We're in a little preview, obviously. Cowboys and Steelers. We got Jeff Hathorn from 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. He's going to join us. A birthday Blake call. It's Blake's birthday today.
Oh, wow.
All right. Great. 25 years. And
Blake's 25?
It's hard to believe, right? It's hard to believe. And we're worried because he's in Mexico. And so my only thing to him was, look, don't get kidnapped by the cartels.
Don't crash out.
Yeah. He has not texted me back for what that's
so far. He's been there 3 days and he did respond to my text message today. He's supposed to come on this afternoon or this evening. So we'll see.
So far, so
what was the text? Oh, he is coming on.
That's great. What he said.
Sweet.
That's what he said. So, man. You know, and I don't, I mean, what would the ransom be for Blake? I mean, if we were really being honest,
they would actually give him back.
Yeah. You know,
they would, they,
I mean, he would stop talking.
He would eat. Yeah. He doesn't stop talking and he eats all the food.
That's it. And yeah. No. And so, yeah, we'll do that. We'll do a little Jake break and then a new segment we're premiering. You guys are old enough to remember Dave Letterman in the top 10.
Yeah.
Top five at 10:20.
Okay.
Here they come, Fred and Jake, the Fan After Dark. Thanks to Lucius Alexander, the pimp cup over there at Master Control here, 75 and Fitz. You just went 5 hours flawless. Thanks to Caitlin. She coordinated our video. Of course, the Nosebleed Boys, Woolchuck and Chia follow and brought us till tomorrow at 2 at Southern Leisure. Come get your flag. You're going home with the nation. At ease.